runs too hardcore. Don't dare to care about someone. I'm dirt, I'm eyes, is that wrong? Love it when I'm play pretending, when I can take bullets to the heart. Fucking up my happy ending, but I can take bullets to the heart.
Chapter 29. Hell is empty.
Breathe and balance and love. I was born on the scene. Now it runs in my blood. Yeah, you know what I mean. When I'm dead and gone, will they sing about me? Dead and gone, will they scream my name? Breathe and balance and love. I was born on the scene. Now it runs in my blood. Yeah, you know what I mean. When I'm dead and gone, will they sing about me? Dead and gone, will they scream my name? Scream my name.
You can't just give a Padawan away like an unwanted pet Anuba, Anakin said, for the fifth or sixth time. He and Obi-Wan were sitting on the bleacher steps in one of the palace gymnasia, where Barriss and Ahsoka were warming up under the watchful eye of Luminata Unduli. The handmaiden Rabe sat a little ways away from them, studying a datapad. I can't believe Master Plo would do that.
I'm sure he had his reasons, Obi-Wan said. He could think of a few, and he didn't like what they were.
Anakin rested his chin on his interlaced fingers and said glumly,
That's what I'm afraid of. You know, I thought that at least the Order would be more, you know, normal in this universe, since they don't have the war or anything.
Yes, Obi-Wan had to admit. He leaned back against the bleacher seats behind him, resting his elbows on them. He had been thinking about that a lot himself, since it was that, or think about what Anakin had felt like beneath him. And under the circumstances, the latter wasn't entirely appropriate. If it had been anyone other than Anakin, he would have welcomed the distraction. But it was Anakin, and so musing on the state of the Jedi Order in this universe was, if not preferable, less likely to do serious damage.
I thought that myself, despite everything Queen Amidala said. I assumed she was biased.
Anakin made a glum noise of agreement, then flinched a little as the sound of an igniting lightsaber carried across the room. Barriss had finished her stretches and was standing back, her blade lit in her hand as she waited for Ahsoka to come down out of her handstand. As Ahsoka took her lightsabers off her belt and ignited them, Luminata said something that Obi-Wan couldn't hear, and then stepped back. The two Padawans moved around each other for a few minutes, getting a feel for the floor and the space, occasionally making little flurrying rushes at each other before pulling back. Then Ahsoka made a sharp, aggressive move forward that Barriss parried, ducking her second blade in an attempt to get inside Ahsoka's guard. Anakin grimaced and covered his face with his hands.
"I can't watch this," he said. "Tell me when it's over."
Anakin, Obi-Wan let the words trail off. There wasn't any point. They knew now that Ahsoka had dueled with a masked Barriss at the underworld warehouse where she had been captured. But at the time, the majority opinion in the council had been that she had been lying. If not about that, then about something. Obi-Wan's and Plo's attempts to convince the rest of the council to wait until they had had time to complete a full investigation had been foiled by Palpatine's involvement. Not for the first time, Obi-Wan wished that he had Palpatine's skinny neck between his hands. The two Padawans hadn't noticed Anakin's distress, but Obi-Wan looked up and met Luminara's eyes across the gymnasium, abruptly realizing that she had been watching Anakin, not her apprentice.
Anakin, what did you tell her?
Enough, apparently, that Luminara knew that something was wrong between the two of them. There was a beat of recognition in the Force,
That half-familiar feeling that Obi-Wan had gotten used to during the 2 months of Anakin's disappearance. Then Luminara blinked and glanced aside, apparently unnerved by the experience. He and the Luminara unduly from his own universe had been friends, and lovers on occasion, for a long time. Some of that connection must have remained even between universes in that odd way the Force had.
How's she doing?
Anakin asked, without moving his hand away from his eyes.
She's winning, right? She'd better be winning.
Obi-Wan considered the two duelists, trying to separate out emotion from analysis. It was very good to see Ahsoka again. It was extremely disconcerting to see Barriss with her, or indeed, at all. They're fairly evenly matched, but I think Barriss is the better duelist. You were right back on Isolde. Ahsoka is still relying too heavily on her second blade, but I don't think Barriss has much experience fighting a dual wielder. Neither of them seems to have the field experience that they do in our own universe. He watched Luminara step back out of the way as Barriss somersaulted over Ahsoka's head and landed behind her, Ahsoka just barely blocking her blow with a backhand stroke.
So she's winning? Anakin pressed.
Making that assessment would be overly hasty at the moment, Obi-Wan said.
Obi-Wan!
Barriss snapped a kick into Ahsoka's right wrist, knocking her longer blade out of her hand and deactivating it. Ahsoka let out a sharp cry of pain, and Anakin shot to his feet, his hand falling to his own lightsaber before Obi-Wan grabbed his sleeve and dragged him back down. She's fine. It's educational. Neither Padawan looked over, Ahsoka throwing a hand out for her lightsaber before a twist of the Force from Barriss sent it skating further away across the floor. She pressed in before Ahsoka could recover, Ahsoka barely parrying the blow with her shorter Shoto blade. Anakin wasn't making any pretense at not paying attention anymore, leaning forward with urgency in every line of his body. Obi-Wan found himself meeting Luminara's eyes again, that odd sense of familiarity thrumming in the air between them. There had been hints of it at their previous meetings, but it had been muted then. This was less so. Ahsoka was on the defensive now, using her Shoto left-handed as her primary blade. Her right hand must have still been numb from Barriss's kick. She crouched low, the way she did when she was feeling less than certain about herself, and circled warily back as Barriss moved in towards her. Obi-Wan felt her grab with the Force, trying to pull Barriss's feet out from under her, then swung her blade up to block Barriss's aggressive blow. Anakin jerked again, his hands balled into fists against his knees.
"Come on, Snips," he said under his breath. "You got this."
Obi-Wan glanced at him, for the moment more worried about him than he was about Barriss and Ahsoka, since it was obvious to him that it was just a friendly duel. If things got out of hand, he was more than confident in Luminara's ability to stop the match before anything really adverse happened. Anakin didn't appear to notice Obi-Wan watching him, all his attention fixed on the duel. Blue and green lightsabers met in a blinding flash of light, then Ahsoka hooked Barriss's feet out from under her and vaulted over her head, a hand on her shoulder sending the other girl stumbling forwards. Ahsoka spun into a roundhouse kick, which Barriss ducked, sliding in under her extended leg with a two-handed blow that Ahsoka parried, knocking her blade to one side.
"Good," Anakin whispered. "Good girl."
Ahsoka threw herself into a backflip over Barriss's outstretched blade, landing for an instant on four spread fingers and a thumb before leaning back and coming up on her feet. Luminara stepped out of the way again, her gaze flicking between the two fighters. Ahsoka made an aggressive rush forward, more sure of herself now, still moving low and fast.
"That's good," Anakin said again. "Keep doing that, she's blasted, Snips!"
Ahsoka had feinted left, but it had been clearly telegraphed, and Barriss was already parrying right, hooking her blade with a twist of her wrist and sending it flying, following it up with a kick to the sternum that knocked Ahsoka onto her backside. She landed heavily, Barriss dropping on her chest with her blade at her throat.
Anakin jerked to his feet, taking a step forward before Ahsoka's laugh carried clearly across the gymnasium. She sounded a little breathless, but definitely pleased, and Obi-Wan saw the confusion chase its way across Anakin's face. Farra said something to her friend, then straightened up and deactivated her lightsaber before offering Ahsoka a hand. She pulled the other girl to her feet, her fingers wrapped around Ahsoka's wrist. Ahsoka held out her hand for her Shoto's hilt, catching it as it flew towards her. She looked around for her primary lightsaber. Obi-Wan saw it at the same time that Anakin did. It had landed closer to them than it had to the duelists, and Anakin hesitated for a moment before stepping forward to pick it up. Ahsoka froze as he came toward her with the hilt outstretched like a peace offering. Obi-Wan stood up, not sure what he meant to do, but aware of the sudden tension in the Force. Luminata and Barriss were both watching them. "That was good, Ahsoka," Anakin said, sounding so hopeful that it hurt. "That was really good." He held out the lightsaber when Ahsoka didn't reach for it. After a moment, Ahsoka took it from him. "Thanks," she said cautiously. Anakin let his hand fall, looking at her and obviously searching for words. After a moment, Luminata came over and put her hand on Ahsoka's shoulder, moving her a little out of the way as she put herself between Ahsoka and Anakin. "Would you like to join us, Master Skywalker?" she said. "I think that you and Barriss might be well matched." Anakin flinched. "I don't think that would be a good idea," he said, and Obi-Wan shut his eyes for a moment, relieved. He trusted Anakin, but... "What about me?" Luminara said, testing. "One night to another." "That..." Anakin glanced over his shoulder at Obi-Wan, then back at Luminara. "I'd like that." Barriss and Ahsoka moved away from the floor as Anakin and Luminara moved to the center of the gymnasium, where they would have the most space to maneuver. The two Padawans came over and sat down on the bleachers near Obi-Wan, sweaty and out of breath from the match. Obi-Wan glanced at them, nodded a greeting. They both regarded him warily, and then looked back at Anakin and Luminara, who had already ignited their lightsabers. "This should be interesting." Anakin and Luminara had sparred before, but Obi-Wan couldn't remember the last time they had done so. Possibly not within the last year, and certainly not since the business with Barriss and Ahsoka. The last time they had come face to face in the temple, Anakin had walked right past her as if he hadn't seen her, his fury driven so deep in the Force that Obi-Wan swore he had heard the walls creak. He had apologized to Luminata for Anakin's behavior, of course. Luminata had looked at him for a long moment and said, "No one blames you for the things your apprentice does, Obi-Wan." She had sounded so exhausted and heartbroken that Obi-Wan hadn't needed the Force to divine her grief and confusion. Instead, he had taken her out to get drunk. Luminata had returned the favor after Anakin's disappearance, when their paths had crossed on Cadan Imodia. Both times, they had ended up in bed together. Obi-Wan laced his fingers together, watching as Anakin made the first move, Luminata parrying the blow to one side and slamming a kick into the underside of Anakin's jaw. He turned the momentum into a backflip, Luminata sweeping in even before he had landed, so that Anakin dashed aside her strike while still in midair. He had, Obi-Wan thought, the advantage of knowing Luminara's fighting style. This universe's Luminara had never sparred with him before, though she had always been a quick study, and it wouldn't do Anakin much good for very long. Anakin almost certainly had more dueling experience, but Luminara had been a knight for a decade longer than he had. "He's good," Barriss said with faint surprise, her attention fixed on the duel. Luminata and Anakin were both moving too fast for anyone but a Jedi to track, lightsabers meeting with crackling energy that made the hair rise on the back of his neck. "He's one of the best duelists in the Order," Obi-Wan said, Barriss gave him an uneasy look, but it was Ahsoka who said,
"Did you really train him?"
"Yes," Obi-Wan said. "Try not to let too much pride leach into the single syllable. And everyone thought that we would both wash out within the first 5 years, too." He had made a promise to Qui-Gon to train Anakin. He had made a promise to Anakin that he would be a Jedi. Both had come true, despite many assumptions to the contrary. Ahsoka and Barriss glanced at each other, something passing between them in the Force that Obi-Wan couldn't interpret. It was disconcerting, to say the least. He hadn't expected to see them here. He certainly hadn't expected to see them together. He didn't know how much Anakin had told them, since Anakin had been too upset afterwards to talk about it. Enough, apparently. Too much, as far as Obi-Wan was concerned. A burst of Force energy sent both Anakin and Luminara skidding backwards, Luminara half running up the wall behind her as she hit it, and turning the motion into a beautiful flip as she launched herself at Anakin. He threw himself sideways over the blade of her lightsaber, landing in a crouch as he swept out one leg to knock her off her feet. Barriss gasped as Luminara fell, but she tucked herself into a ball and rolled, bouncing back up in time to block an overhand strike and slam a spin kick into Anakin's chest. Obi-Wan had always loved watching both Anakin and Luminara fight. He felt the Force shift a little, and looked over to see the cause. Captain Kenobi and Queen Amidala had just come in, followed by Padme and Livier in blue and green hooded cloaks. Seeing the duelists, they hung back by the door, Captain Kenobi's gaze tracking every move. Padme, with a whispered word to Livier, skated carefully around the edge of the gymnasium until she reached the bleachers. She sat down next to Obi-Wan, pushing her hood back from her face with both hands. "Is he winning?" she asked. "They're about even at the moment," Obi-Wan replied, turning towards her. She looked tired and a little worn, her emotions tangled up so that he had the impression that even she didn't know how she felt. "How was the meeting?" Padme hesitated before answering. Queen Amidala had been in meetings with planetary representatives all morning, but both of them knew that there was only one that Obi-Wan cared about. "At last," Padme said, "Mandalore is thinking about leaving the Republic." Obi-Wan stared at her, shock washing everything else from his mind. "Satine's what?" The holonet added, "Oh!" Obi-Wan looked back at the floor, where Luminara had just slammed a kick into Anakin's jaw and sent him staggering back. Obi-Wan tensed reflexively, his heart in his throat, as Luminara pressed her advantage, the two knights' lightsabers moving too quickly for the human eye to track as Anakin backed up. He must have spotted an opening, because he abruptly dropped into a crouch and swept one leg out, catching Luminara's feet out from under her. She went down in a tumble of dark fabric. But as Anakin rose, she came up in a one-armed handstand and kicked him in the head. Padme winced. The duel ended less than a minute later, as Luminara's bad knee abruptly gave out. Anakin, who had been on the offensive, froze as she dropped to the floor, then deactivated his lightsaber, said something to her, and offered her his hand. Wincing, Luminara deactivated her own blade and let him pull her to her feet, leaning on him as she limped over to the bleachers. Barriss leapt down to take her from Anakin, helping her to a seat. "Are you all right, Master?" she asked urgently. "I'm fine," Luminara said, flicking the fabric of her overskirts aside to lay her hands on her bad knee. "Just not quite as healed as I hoped." Anakin hovered for a moment, then blinked. Obi-Wan looked away from Luminara to follow his line of sight. Captain Kenobi, holding hands with Queen Amidala, had come over. "Luminara," he said, a little inquisitively. "I'm all right," she told him. She considered him for a moment, then tipped her head in Obi-Wan's direction. "Your turn." Captain Kenobi frowned as both Anakin and Padme looked at Obi-Wan. After a moment, Obi-Wan pushed to his feet. "Shall we?" he asked, stepping down from the bleachers and taking his lightsaber off his belt. His counterpart smiled, disconcertingly familiar, and paused to strip off his velvet waistcoat and steal a quick kiss from the Queen. He was wearing a lightsaber on each hip, his own and Qui-Gon's old one. The Queen must have brought it along for him. But he only reached for one of them, the blade glowing blue as he ignited it to one side. Obi-Wan ignited his own lightsaber as they moved out to the center of the gymnasium floor, trying to get a feel for the other man in the Force. He had no idea if they shared a fighting style or not, though the hilt for the captain's lightsaber was the same as his own. That didn't mean anything. They circled each other for a few seconds, Obi-Wan flipping his lightsaber around in his hand at nearly the same moment the captain did. He saw the captain's lips quirk slightly in amusement and acknowledgement. Then he moved, a fast rush forward. Obi-Wan slashed out, knocking his blade aside, but the captain was already there, slamming a kick into his knee. Obi-Wan jerked away, slapping a blow at the captain that the other man parried. They grappled for a moment, their blades hissing and spitting as energy crackled between them. Then the captain twisted sideways, throwing an elbow into his neck. Obi-Wan leaned out of the way of the blow, his lightsaber slicing downwards before the captain blocked it to one side, pressing down in an attempt to make Obi-Wan lose his grip. They were close enough that Obi-Wan could feel his breath against his face. He slammed his forehead forward against the other man's, hard enough that he saw stars for a moment, but it succeeded in making the captain disengage and stagger back. Obi-Wan took a step back, flipping his lightsaber hilt around again out of nervous energy. The captain wiped the back of his free hand over his mouth, smiling a little, and said, "Is that all you've got, Jedi?" Obi-Wan arched an eyebrow. "Do you do more talking or fighting, Captain? I thought talking was what the Jedi were good at." Obi-Wan moved first, his lightsaber swooping around in a backstroke that the other man blocked, snapping his blade sideways to parry the return stroke. The captain swept a high kick at him. Obi-Wan leaned out of the way and snapped a kick into his knee, which made the captain falter for an instant before he swung around to hook a foot around Obi-Wan's ankle. Obi-Wan threw himself into a backflip, his lightsaber slashing up to block the other man's aggressive downward stroke. He spun his blade to counter what his instincts told him the captain's next move was going to be, not considering that the captain might do the same. For a few seconds, both lightsabers flashed before and behind and to the side of each bearer, never quite meeting, until Obi-Wan and the captain slammed their blades together in a blinding flash of light between them. Obi-Wan thrust his free hand out at the same instant the captain did, the Force flexing between them. He could feel the pressure of the other man's mind straining against his own, clean, cold strength that was so familiar that for a moment he couldn't breathe. He met the captain's unblinking gaze over the joined blades, seeing the recognition and realization in his blue eyes, then shoving through the Force with a Jedi Master's strength and skill. The captain went flying backwards. Obi-Wan himself thrust away with the backwash of energy. He turned the motion into a backflip, landing in a three-point crouch with his blade held out to one side. The captain had done the same and was now on his feet. As Obi-Wan straightened up, he took Qui-Gon's lightsaber off his belt and ignited it. Obi-Wan smiled. He threw himself forward, tucking himself into a ball in midair, and landed on one knee, sweeping his blade low even as the other man leapt over it. Slapping one lightsaber blade aside, he slammed a back kick into the captain's stomach, twisting to parry the second blade at the same time that he ducked the other one. "Obi-Wan!" Anakin yelled, and Obi-Wan shoved himself into a backflip, reaching out with his free hand to grab Anakin's thrown lightsaber out of the air. He ignited it as he landed, catching sight of the captain's grin as the four blades met. The captain was very, very good. Obi-Wan was better. He slammed forward, all four lightsabers moving in a blinding blur, pushing the captain back on the defensive as they moved across the floor of the gymnasium. He was aware of the wall behind the other men,
knew that that might give him an advantage, and slammed Qui-Gon's blade down with his own, sending sparks flying up from the floor. Obi-Wan snapped a kick up into the captain's wrist, catching Qui-Gon's familiar hilt with his mind and sending it flying halfway across the gymnasium. The captain backhanded him viciously. Obi-Wan spat blood as he took a step back, getting both blades up in time to block his blow. An instant later, he lost a lightsaber. He wasn't sure which, as the captain grabbed his wrist and twisted around so that his back was against Obi-Wan's chest, coming in so close that Obi-Wan couldn't use his own lightsaber. He slammed his skull back against Obi-Wan's forehead, hooking his feet out from under him and blocking Obi-Wan's reflexive lightsaber stroke with his blade behind his back as he spun away. Obi-Wan staggered back, tasting blood in his mouth where he must have split his lip open on a tooth, and flexed the fingers of his free hand. The captain spun his remaining blade in one hand, his expression intent and focused. Obi-Wan arched his eyebrows and spread his arms, flicking his fingers in a come-on gesture. The captain moved exactly the way Qui-Gon would have done, an aggressive forward rush that Obi-Wan was already reacting to before he realized that it had been a bluff. He barely managed to parry the captain's butterfly stroke aside, throwing himself into a backflip over his remaining blade, to bounce back on his feet a moment later, already sweeping his blade out. The captain caught it on his own, the lightsabers crackling against the sustained contact as the blades slid along each other, up towards the identical hilts. They both reached out in unison, the force twisting around them in something that Obi-Wan vaguely registered as confusion. He caught the lightsaber hilt that slapped into his palm the same instant that the captain did the same, the blades igniting and sparking off each other as they met between them. There was a spatter of applause from the bleachers when neither of them moved. Obi-Wan met the captain's eyes over their joined blades, then nodded slightly and stepped back, deactivating both lightsabers. He looked down to see that it was Qui-Gon's hilt he had caught. Captain Kenobi was holding Anakin's, the one Anakin had brought back from the other universe's future. Luminara stood up and limped over to them. "Well, that was very impressive, gentlemen," she said. "Has that been settled, or shall I go find a measuring tape while you two drop your pants?" The captain made a choking sound. Obi-Wan just said, "Is that really necessary, Luminara?" "Give me a minute, and I'm sure I can come up with what Quinlan would have said if he'd been here." "No thanks," Captain Kenobi said. "I'm already imagining it." He looked down at the lightsaber hilt in his hand, then grimaced and held it out towards Obi-Wan. "I believe this is yours." Obi-Wan passed him Qui-Gon's lightsaber, accepting Anakin's in exchange. He handed it off again as Anakin came over, carrying a bottle of water and looking a little flushed. "I think you had him," Anakin said, trading the water for the lightsaber and hooking the latter onto his belt. "Your optimism is duly noted," Obi-Wan said, after he drank a third of the bottle. Anakin scoffed. "I'm a professional. 2 more minutes and you'd have had him." Obi-Wan glanced over at Captain Kenobi, who had an arm wrapped around Queen Amidala's waist and was kissing her. Anakin followed his line of sight, then blinked, stared, and jerked his gaze away. Obi-Wan looked back at him, feeling the direction of his thoughts in the Force. There was a bruise darkening on his cheek where Luminara had kicked him, and Obi-Wan reached out towards it, letting the Force gather around his fingers. "Thanks," Anakin murmured, as the bruise faded under Obi-Wan's touch. The moment stretched out between them, Anakin's skin warm against his fingertips, his gaze open and intent. "You could have him," Obi-Wan thought. "Right here, right now, for the asking. He'd let you. He'd like it." He let his hand drop. "You could," Anakin said softly. "You know I'll let you do whatever you want with me." "You shouldn't say things like that," Obi-Wan said. And then, "Yes, I know." Anakin smirked.
Maybe later, Obi-Wan added, and could have kicked himself for it, except that Anakin's grin widened.
Don't make promises you're not planning on keeping, old man, he said.
I said maybe, Obi-Wan pointed out primly. I seem to remember having had a conversation or two about the importance of listening comprehension in the past.
Then I know you heard what I said.
Anakin put a hand on Obi-Wan's arm, light and without any pressure, but it was enough.
Whatever you want. Anything you want.
Anakin. Anything he said at this juncture would be pointless, since he knew that Anakin could sense it all through the Force. All the secrets that he had been keeping from Anakin were being uncovered one by one. Obi-Wan didn't know how he felt about that. They had been secrets for a reason. Instead, he just said, "Don't do this here."
"Promises, promises," Anakin said, his happiness bleeding into the Force.
Most of his burnout had healed. Obi-Wan could feel him almost clearly now, with only a little of the charring around the edges of his presence that he had been aware of before. He had a sudden flash of sense memory. Anakin's body beneath his, Anakin's mouth on his, Anakin's hands on his skin, the heat of Anakin's desire flooding the Force. For a moment, it was all that Obi-Wan could think of, and he just stared blankly at Anakin. "You can't do this," warring with, "Why not?" The click of Padme's low heels on the hardwood floor shattered the moment like a burst bubble. Anakin took a step back, rubbing his hand over the back of his neck as he released Obi-Wan's arm and turned to look at her. Obi-Wan crossed his arms over his chest, a little unnerved by that instant of unexpected intimacy, and glad for the relief of Padme's arrival. She smiled up at him.
"That was very impressive," she said.
"I have my moments," Obi-Wan told her, and Anakin snorted and said, "More than moments. If you listened to the younglings talk about him, you'd think he hung the moons of Iego."
"When were you listening to the younglings talk?" Obi-Wan said, amused.
Anakin, uneasy around children, tended to avoid the creche like the plague. Anakin glanced aside, self-conscious, then said, "Someone suggested that I take another Padawan to help with, you know, and he wouldn't shut up about it, so I went down there a couple of months ago just so he'd stop mentioning it every time he saw me. It was fine, I did some lightsaber demos, hung out with the kids, and then we got deployed to Odrin, so anyway, nothing happened."
Obi-Wan hadn't known that. From Padme's expression, neither had she.
"Who?" he asked, rubbing a hand over his beard. Anakin bit his lip, then confessed. "Eeth Koth. And Master Unceases, but he only said it once. At least I don't have to hear that anymore."
"No," Obi-Wan said. "Eeth Koth's dead."
Anakin's shock reverberated in the Force.
"What? How? When?"
Obi-Wan rubbed his thumb over the corner of his mouth, wincing a little as he found the place where he'd cut his lip open.
"About a week after the Battle of Odrin. It was one of the reasons I was redeployed so quickly, even though a good half the battalion was still in the hospital or walking wounded, including most of the officers."
"And you?" Padme reminded him. "I thought it was just because of what happened with the reporter."
"That didn't help," Obi-Wan had to allow. Then saw Anakin's stricken expression and added, "It's not as bad as it sounds."
"I don't believe you," Anakin began. But whatever else he was going to say was forgotten as Queen Amidala and Captain Kenobi came over to them, holding hands again.
"That was very impressive," the Gwyn said, her intonation only a little different from Padme's had been. For some reason, her voice was a little lower pitched than Padme's, though it wasn't immediately noticeable unless you heard them together. I have a request for you both, Master Jedi.
We're at your service, Your Majesty, Obi-Wan said.
Anakin looked a little wary, but didn't say anything. The Queen inclined her chin slightly in acknowledgement, her expression suggesting that she hadn't expected anything but agreement. The Captain just raised an eyebrow.
We'll be leaving tomorrow for the Confederate Congress at Raxus, the Queen said. Unfortunately, I can't meet with every representative here individually, just the most urgent cases. So Queen Brea has arranged a reception to be held in the morning before we leave. I would like you and the other Jedi to provide security, along with the Alderaanian Palace Guard.
The room we're using has a balcony, Captain Kenobi said, taking up smoothly where the Queen had left off. Queen Luminara and the Padawans will be on the floor with us, with you two on the balcony as top eyes. Is that a problem?
We've done it before, Anakin said, crossing his arms over his chest.
You're expecting trouble?
No, but I'd rather be prepared than caught off guard, the captain said. Most of the honorable representatives from the delegation worlds are stronger supporters of Her Majesty than many of the members of the Confederacy that have been in for longer, since they have actual principles, unlike some people I could name. It was never made public that Padme was coming to Alderaan. The Hollinet outage actually helps us for once, since it means that the number of people who know she's here is limited. As far as most of the galaxy knows, she never left Naboo, and won't for another day or so. But we've had assassination attempts at events like this before.
He ran a hand over his clean-shaven chin, his expression thoughtful, and added deliberately,
I've assassinated people at events like this before.
Obi-Wan blinked at the bald admission, feeling Anakin stiffen beside him. But the captain's familiar eyes were bright, his attention watchful in the Force.
Well then, Obi-Wan said, I'll endeavor not to do anything that you would.
The captain smiled.
Don't be cruel, my love, Queen Amidala said, then saw Lydia's gesture from the bleachers and added,
Blast! I've got to go and meet with the Gortal.
Captain Kenobi began. You aren't coming. Senator Talabit doesn't like you, the Queen reminded him. Neither do the five other representatives I'm meeting with in the next 2 hours.
I know that, the Captain said.
Technically speaking, Talabit doesn't have strong feelings on me. He just doesn't like Jedi at all. It's me, Dichi, who doesn't like me. I was going to say that I'm going to check in on the pilots.
Take your new apprentice with you, Queen Amidala said. She plucked at the sleeve of his sweat-soaked gray shirt and added,
And change first. I'll see you for the meeting with the Alina.
Yes, dear, Captain Kenobi said, bending down to kiss her. Amidala turned her face up to him, smiling.
Try not to kill anyone if they don't deserve it.
Try not to start a war unless they have it coming, he returned.
Darling, I'm hurt.
She caught Padme's eye and stepped aside. Padme sighed.
I'd better go too, she said.
She hesitated for a moment, then kissed Anakin and Obi-Wan rapidly in succession, leaving them both blinking after her in bemusement as she followed Queen Amidala towards the doors, pulling her hood back up as she went.
Captain Kenobi raised an eyebrow at them, then said, I'll make sure you get holos for the room plan so you can coordinate with the palace guard.
He turned away and strode back to Luminara and the Padawans, leaving Anakin and Obi-Wan alone on the floor of the gymnasium.
This is literally the weirdest thing we've ever done, Anakin said.
Obi-Wan eyed him.
Really? Says the man who went to a future where all of us were dead and apparently spoke to my ghost on a regular basis.
Anakin tipped his head to one side, considering, then said,
Now, this is definitely weirder. That was just depressing.
He ran a hand back through his sweat-soaked hair and grimaced.
I need a shower and a cold pack. I've taken lighter hits from battle droids and Luminara kicks like an Eopie. The feeling is mutual, Obi-Wan said, frowning gingerly at the swelling that was starting to come up around one eye. He could heal it later, or get Anakin to do so if he was feeling up to it, but at the moment, he felt like he would have preferred to have gone a few rounds with General Grievous. Captain Kenobi had already collected Ahsoka and left, leaving Luminara and Barriss alone on the stands with Rabe, who had gone back to her datapad. Luminara stood up as they approached, ignoring Barriss's hissed protest. Master Kenobi, she said as they both paused, carefully not looking towards Anakin. A word in private, if you please.
You can't leave the room, Rabe said without looking up. Nice show trust there, Anakin muttered. Sure you want us to provide security for the reception?
No one asked me. We won't leave the room, Obi-Wan said. He kept a careful eye on Luminara as they went over to the far side of the gymnasium and sat down on the bleachers there, but didn't offer to help her. He might have done so for his own Luminara, but this wasn't her, and he didn't know how she would take that. Her limp looked better than it had when she had come off the floor earlier, at least. Luminara stretched her bad leg out and grimaced, then smoothed her hands down over her thighs as she turned to Obi-Wan. I want you to tell me about what happened to Barriss in your universe, she said. Obi-Wan sighed, letting his forearms rest on his thighs as he leaned forward. I was afraid you were going to say that, he said. What do you know? Anakin said that he let some of it slip to Ahsoka and the others, but he was too upset to tell me how much. He was upset, Luminara said, arching her eyebrows. Barriss was practically hysterical, and my Padawan does not get hysterical easily.
I'm aware.
Obi-Wan rubbed the side of his thumb against his mouth, thinking, and said, I'm afraid Anakin and I haven't been entirely truthful with you about the war in our own timeline. It's relevant, I promise. It was an ugly story, and he wanted to tell it almost as little as Luminara wanted to hear it. It was also the second time that he had had to tell it to Luminara, since she had been off-world at the time of the bombing and Ahsoka's arrest and trial. And he had insisted on giving her the bad news personally instead of leaving it to one of the more senior council members. She hadn't taken it very well then, either. She'd given Obi-Wan a black eye. He hadn't protested, since, under the circumstances, the least he could do was let her hit him. Luminara listened patiently, asking for clarification only twice, with neither her face nor the Force giving anything away. When Obi-Wan had finished, they both sat in silence for a few minutes. Anakin and Barriss's tentative conversation on the other side of the gymnasium, he thought she was asking him about a lightsaber technique he had used, was a faint murmur on the very edge of his perception. All of his attention was on Luminara. Thank you, she said at last. I'm sorry, Obi-Wan had to say. I know it wasn't her, Luminara said. She rested her elbows on her knees, her hands clasped together. After a moment, she added, Was she the only one? Barriss was the only Jedi we knew of involved in that conspiracy, Obi-Wan said. If she had a conspirator within the temple, we weren't able to find one. But she wasn't the only Jedi who was shattered by the war. Who else? Pong Krell murdered his own troops. Some of mine, too. Deepa Balaba turned on Mace Windu on Harren Kal. The backlash from their fight broke her mind. I have her council seat. He rubbed a hand over his face. Ahsoka resigned, of course. I came close. Luminara shot him a sharp look. How close?
Close enough that the only reason I'm not getting raked over the coals by the rest of the council for nearly deserting in the middle of a war is because I'm here instead. He looked across the gymnasium at Anakin and Barriss, who had gotten up and were standing with their lightsabers ignited. Anakin was showing her a blocking technique he had used against Luminara. Even from here, Obi-Wan could feel the force of his focus. He was terrified that he was going to forget himself and hurt her. Luminara rested her chin on top of her hands, following his gaze. Her voice was very soft as she said, "Would you believe it of him?" Obi-Wan looked down at his hands. "There was another universe before this one," he said eventually. "The Ouroboros from our universe was damaged, and it switched Anakin and his counterpart from the other universe. He was a Sith Lord." Numenara jerked like he had struck her, her eyes flaring wide in surprise. She swung around to stare at Anakin, her headdress flaring out with the movement. "Him! Not him," Obi-Wan said, wincing at how harsh his voice was. "Someone else with his face and his name." He put a hand to his forehead, his fingers brushing over the scar by his hairline. "Anakin is not Darth Vader any more than I am Captain Kenobi, or Barriss is the woman who tried to blow up the Jedi Temple." She stared at him for a moment, then nodded. "You're right. I apologize. Paths not taken can never be walked," Luminara finished for him. She scrubbed her hands over her face and sighed. "You didn't ask why I resigned." "It's hardly my place to ask," Obi-Wan said, "or to wonder under the circumstances." "I would." "Luminara, Master Unduli, I would never presume." She gave him a curious look, then laughed a little. "You know, sometimes you sound more like the Obi-Wan Kenobi I remember than Obi-Wan does." "I am Obi-Wan Kenobi," he reminded her. "Just not this world's Obi-Wan Kenobi." "I know, it's just disconcerting. It's hard to live in a galaxy where this one thing was true for so long, then have it not ripped away precisely, but to see the might have been." "Yes," Obi-Wan said after a moment of thought. "It very much is." The sound of distant blaster fire was becoming an unpleasant fact of Stas Alley's reality, and the worst part was that she was actually starting to get used to it. While the Theed Royal Palace and the city's RNSF base had been taken, and more importantly, held, during the initial thrust of the invasion, the Republic's attempts to take the city itself had fared less well. There had been incessant fighting in Theed for days now. The army had to clear the city neighborhood by neighborhood, and half the time the clones had to go back to retake the neighborhoods that they had already declared secure. Stas had been out there once or twice, even though most of her duties kept her close to the palace. It was an ugly, brutal slog that had high casualties on both sides. By law, all Naboo citizens were in the Planetary Defense Reserves and kept weapons in their homes. Now they were using those weapons, unwilling to live under a military occupation for the second time in less than 2 decades. Many of them had learned how to fight a war of attrition from personal experience 13 years earlier. This was a bad idea, Stas thought, not for the first time. She had broached her reservation back on Coruscant when she had been first assigned to this mission, but the decision to invade the planet had been far over her head. She had done her duty. That was what mattered. Or at least, that was what she had thought at the time. She wasn't so certain anymore. She turned the data crystal she had taken from the security center over between her fingers, leaning against a decorative pillar as she stared out the window at the water garden below. The palace was full of courtyards and gardens, little nooks and crannies filled with greenery or fountains or decorative statuary that somehow managed never to look forced or out of place. Most of it was largely untouched by the fighting, which Stas found as a relief. It was nice to find even that small space in the palace where she could forget for a few minutes what was going on around her. She couldn't really forget, of course. The blaster fire from the city made that impossible, even if the force hadn't been filled with death and dying. "You seem troubled, Stas." Stas turned to see Aeg and Kolar behind her, regarding her with quiet concern. She set her shoulder against the pillar she'd been leaning on and said, "Troubled, yes. You're not wrong." "A burden shared is a burden lightened," he offered. She tried not to wrinkle her nose in resignation at the aphorism. Jedi sayings seemed out of place here amidst all this chaos, even in an oasis of peace like this space. For a dozen paces on either side of her, there was no sign of the fighting that had taken place in the palace. Then the walls, floor, and ceiling began to show signs of carbon scoring from blaster fire. Stas looked down at the data crystal in her hand. She hadn't shared it with anyone, not even Aegon. The implications were almost too much for her to contemplate, and she didn't want to burden anyone else with them. And if she was right... If she was right, it came very close to being far too much for any one Jedi to contemplate. Heresy. Treason. "Stas?" Aegon said, when she didn't respond. If she couldn't trust another Jedi, then she might as well cut her own throat and have done with it, because then the Sith had already won. "Come with me," she said abruptly, slipping the data crystal into one of her belt pouches. "I want to see something, and I haven't had time before this." "What is it?" Aegon said, falling in step beside her as she marched down the hallway. "I'm not sure yet." They turned out of the hallway into a large rotunda that was currently filled with lounging clone troopers, most of whom started to get up as they saw the two Jedi. Stas waved them down, looking around the space and letting the Force guide her. "You," she said, pointing to one trooper, anonymous amongst his companions except for his shaved head. "Are you busy?" "No, General." Inquisitiveness overlaid his words in the Force, but he didn't ask what she wanted. "Come with us," Stas ordered. He picked up his helmet and settled it on his head, then picked up his blaster rifle. "You won't need that," Stas said, but he just shrugged. "Regulations say to be armed at all times in enemy territory, ma'am, and this counts." Since Stas was wearing her lightsaber on her hip, she could hardly argue with that. "All right." As they left the rotunda and headed in the direction of the wing where the Jedi healers and the clone medics had set up, she asked, "What's your number, trooper?"
CT-7567, General.
"Do you have a name?" Aegon asked.
The clone hesitated for a moment, then said,
"They call me Rex, General Kolar. Lieutenant Rex."
Clone rank wasn't really delineated in any way that Stas had yet been able to work out, though most of the clones seemed to know who each other were. Most of the commanders that she had met were Kama and Pauldrons, but not all of them. Some of them also had stripes on their armor to designate the command rank, but again, not all of them. It was essentially impossible to figure out the rank of anyone lower than commander at this point, a fact that was an ongoing point of confusion for every Jedi general Stas had spoken to. They could tell the clones apart. The ongoing practicalities of their presence in the Gar had yet to be determined. Aegon kept shooting Stas worried looks as they made their way through the now-crowded palace, but he didn't ask what they were doing or why she needed a clone trooper for it. Stas was glad about that. She didn't know if she could have explained this in any way that made sense. It didn't make sense, not really. Not yet. she still wasn't sure whether she actually wanted it to make sense at any point. She wasn't certain of the original purpose of the wing that had been repurposed as a hospital, but the main room was open and airy, with cots set up at regular intervals and numerous smaller rooms that were being used as surgeries. Stas moved out of the way of the entrance and then paused, looking around for a face that she recognized. She could feel the ripples in the force from the wounded men and women here. Clones, mostly, and a few Jedi. The wounded Naboo were being taken care of somewhere else. They were being given medical treatment, of course. It would have been obscene to do anything else, though it had been suggested more than once to just let the Naboo die. No Jedi would be party to that, though. "Master Nima," she said, "do you have 5 minutes?" The Jedi healer detoured from her path and came over to them, looking the three of them over with a practiced eye. She was near human, with green skin and a decorative headpiece that framed her face. She, Stas, and Aegon had all been younglings and Padawans together, along with Obi-Wan Kenobi and a handful of other Jedi Knights. "Are you hurt?" she asked Stas, raising an eyebrow. "No, none of us are injured," Stas said quickly. "Can you be spared for a few minutes? I want to run a neural scan, and I'd like a professional's opinion." Rig paused and turned on the ball of one foot to scan the room. Whatever she saw must have decided her, because she turned back toward Stas and said, "Yes, as long as it doesn't take more than half an hour. That's when the next transport is due back from the city." "Did you say a neural scan?" "On this clone." Stas indicated Lieutenant Rex, who was now radiating faint concern in the Force, but hadn't spoken yet. "It has to be an atomic-level brain scan. Do we have the equipment for that here?" "Yes, of course. Let me check that it's not being used at the moment." Rig turned away to speak into her comlink, while Aegon caught Stas's arm and drew her aside. "What are you doing?" he said in an undertone. "An atomic-level brain scan? What are you expecting to find?" "Something," Stas said. "If there's nothing there, well, then I'll know I was lied to. If there is..." She let the words trail off. "It wasn't us," the handmaiden. Motie Aleri, she had finally discovered after going through the intelligence reports on the Queenstown retinue, had said. But the problem was that Stas still didn't know what it was. "You think the Naboo paid the Kaminoans to leave some kind of trap for us in the clones?" Aegon said, his brow furrowed in concern. "No," Stas said. "No, I don't. If they had the money to do that, then we never would have been able to buy the clones in the first place. They were meant for the Naboo, after all." Rig came back before Aegon had a chance to respond to that. "Come with me," she said. She led them out of the main hall and into one of the side passages, going down the corridor until she pivoted finally on one foot and took them into a small room with jury-rigged medical equipment set up to fill the space. There were no medical droids in sight. Stas was glad for that, since a droid's programming could be subverted, but a Jedi's word, once given, would not be broken. Stas pressed the button to close the door behind them as Rig turned to the clone. "You'll need to take off your helmet, Trooper. You can keep the rest of your armor." Rex slid off his helmet and tucked it under his arm, his expression uncomfortable.
"What is all this, General?"
"It's a neural scanner," Rig explained, showing him where to lie down. "It looks at your brain structure and finds out if there are abnormalities, anything that shouldn't be there." She shot Stas a questioning look.
"Wouldn't the Kaminoans have discovered that before they let me go, ma'am? Bad batches don't last long in the training camps, if they even make it out of the tanks."
Stas winced a little. "That's not what we're looking for." "This shouldn't hurt," Rig told him. "If it does, tell me immediately, but you shouldn't feel anything at all. Just a little pressure, maybe." She swung the scanner down over Rex's head as he frowned up at it, adding, "You can close your eyes if it makes you more comfortable." Stas turned away as the equipment began to hum,
studying the screen as the first scans began to appear. She wasn't a healer by practice, though she had some training in it. Every Jedi did. Aegon stepped up beside her, his arms crossed over his chest. The first few scans were unexceptional, and Stas felt the knot in her chest begin to ease. Maybe the Naboo had lied to her after all. Maybe they had been trying to shake the Jedi's faith in the clones. Then the final scan began to appear on the screen, the atomic-level scan. And abruptly the knot tightened and hardened into stone.
"What is that?" Aegon said, shocked. "Rig, what is this?"
"Just a moment."
She swung the scanner aside as soon as the picture had finished rendering, Rex blinking up at her as he sat up.
"Was that all, ma'am? What did you find?"
"That was the scan, yes."
Rig came over to join Stas and Aegon, peering at the screen in clear bewilderment.
"I don't... What is that? It shouldn't be there." "What shouldn't be there?"
Rex's voice rose in growing alarm as he followed the healer.
"What am I looking at?"
It was nice to see some life out of a clone, Stas thought, even if the circumstances weren't exactly what she would call ideal. Rig pointed out the small, dark mass on the screen. In origin, it was probably no larger than a few atoms across, but it had spread out across some of the brain matter surrounding it to form a shadow on the brain scan about the size of a human thumbnail.
"That shouldn't be there," she said. "I'm not sure what it is, but it shouldn't be there. I've gone over the clone medical charts extensively, and there's no mention anywhere in them of something like this."
Rex looked a little green.
"Is it just me?" he asked her. "Or is it all of us?"
"I don't know. I'll have to do more testing to find out."
"Can you remove it?"
Aegon asked Rig.
"Or do you risk damaging the brain? Perhaps we can divine some sense of what its purpose is meant to be."
"I can, but I'll need to use a medical droid. The procedure is too delicate for me to do on my own."
She turned to Rex. "Would you consent to having this removed, Lieutenant? It ought to be a fairly painless procedure, and there should be very little risk. There is always some when it comes to the brain, however." He looked a little surprised to be asked, but said,
"Yes, ma'am. I think I'll feel better not having it in there."
"Very good."
Rig looked around at the room, then nodded to herself and said, "I can do this here. It won't take long. I just need to find a medical droid." Stas and Aegon looked at each other as Rig went out into the hallway. Rex eyed them both suspiciously, but, to Stas's relief, didn't ask any further questions. That didn't stop Aegon.
"You knew it was there?"
he said to Stas in an undertone.
"How did you know? How could you know? None of the rest of us did."
Stas thought about the data crystal in her pocket. She thought about treason, and heresy, and a dead woman and a living man, and a crime 13 years in the making.
"Have you ever considered that the Council might be wrong?" she asked him. "If you moon jockeys get one scratch on her paint, I'm going to—"
"I know," Jasfei Tamriel snapped, swinging around to glare at him. "You're going to space the lot of us."
"No, I'm going to shoot all of you and make it look like an accident," Ani said, aggravated.
The pilots and a few of the Naboo Marines who had come over from the Indomitable were getting the N1 starfighters out of the twilight, a procedure which was likely to give Ani a premature heart attack sometime in the next half hour, especially since he'd been forbidden from helping. They had barely gotten the Vipers in the first time. Getting them out again was a nightmare.
It was bad enough on solid ground with gravity at galactic average. It would have been near impossible in space.
"You're going to shoot us," Tamriel repeated. "Really?"
Ani shoved his gloved but still cold-numbed hands into the pockets of his greatcoat. The shield over the Twilight's landing platform kept the snow out and the temperature theoretically above freezing,
but he was damned if he could tell. He wasn't setting foot outside the shields to compare. Trust me, I can make it look like an accident.
I wouldn't advise it,
said a light, half-familiar male voice from behind him. Jaspi Tom Reel came abruptly to attention, her right hand snapping up in a salute. Ani stared at her in surprise as she said,
Sir!
At ease, pilot officer. Ani turned to see who the speaker was, trying to figure out why the voice sounded so familiar. He had a moment's startled impression of a fair-haired human man dressed in a Naboo-style winter cloak and furs. Then the force hit him like a load of bricks to the face, and he staggered back, his head spinning. Ani's sixth sense had been a part of him his entire life. It had never occurred to him to process it as something existing outside of himself. But for the first time he was aware of it, really aware of it, as only one small part of an infinite web stretching far beyond the confines of his own fragile body. Everything seemed to hum golden for a moment, stretching out into eternity. And then Ani felt it snap, reverberating back into his mind with a sharp pain that had his hands coming up to clutch at his own temples before he forced them down out of nothing more than sheer bullheaded pride.
I know you, he gasped. How do I know you?
The other man looked as shocked as he felt, though he had taken a step forward instead of back. Belatedly, Ani realized that he did know him. He'd seen him in enough Holonet broadcasts to recognize his face, even if the down-market version hadn't been sharing ship space with him for the past few days. This was Obi-Wan Kenobi. The real Obi-Wan Kenobi. The Queen's Knight. Ani's head was spinning. He was a little surprised that he could actually remember his own name. After a moment, he managed to register that Kenobi wasn't alone. And there was a girl with him, a Togruta teenager bundled in a thick blue poncho, hemmed with white fur that hung nearly to her knees. When he met her eyes, Ani felt another spark of impossible recognition, muted this time instead of the lightning storm that the first had been. She said, You're Anakin Skywalker. Ani jerked his head in a nod, too stunned to correct her. Kenobi caught his arm before Ani had even seen him move. He had a grip like Durasteel, even through the sleeve of Ani's greatcoat and the three layers he was wearing beneath that. Both of you inside the ship now, he snapped. Ani let himself be dragged along rather than try and protest. He passed Jaspi Tamriel as Kenobi pulled him up the Twilight's ramp. The RNSFC pilot was staring at them in bewildered surprise. He felt a little calmer as soon as he was inside the Twilight, though that didn't do anything to help the way that the world seemed to have come unmoored from its setting, vibrating around him like every fixed point had vanished at once. Kenobi hit the control to close the hatch behind them, not letting go of Ani's arm. You're Anakin Skywalker, he said, the same way the Togruta girl had said it. This universe is Anakin Skywalker. Ani, Ani managed to say, eventually remembering how to form words. Coherent thoughts still felt a little beyond him. It's Ani. No one calls me Anakin. He's feral, said the Togruta.
Hey kid, don't get snippy with me,
Ani snapped, finally jerking his arm out of Kenobi's grip. Are all Jedi this rude? Then he blinked, because he couldn't see a lightsaber. There shouldn't have been any way for him to have known that, except he did.
Please endeavor not to insult people as soon as you meet them, Padawan, Kenobi said to the girl. It's generally considered very poor diplomatic practice, and I know Master Plo taught you better than that.
C-3PO chose that moment to totter out of a corridor, saying, Oh, Master Ani, thank goodness you're back. Perhaps you can put a stop to that awful...
3PO, shut up, Ani said reflexively. If it bothers you that much, tell them to stop it.
C-3PO was already focused innocently on Kenobi and the Chagruta girl.
"But who is this?" he said. "I am C-3PO, human-cyborg relations."
Ani put a hand to his forehead, muttering a Hutti's curse.
Sounding a little charmed, the Chagruta girl said, "I'm Ahsoka Tano."
"3PO, go bother LB or something," Ani said, raising his head. "Please, just go away."
C-3PO gave him a look that Ani could only interpret as wounded, and wandered off, muttering, "Well, I never," to himself as he disappeared down a corridor. Ani looked back at Kenobi and Ahsoka, reminding himself that lunging at Kenobi and demanding an explanation for what in blazes had just happened would probably end in violence. Instead, he crossed his arms over his chest, took a deep breath, and said, "What the hell was that?" Kenobi hesitated. Ahsoka turned to look at him, her expression just as confused as Ani felt. After a moment of thought, Kenobi said, "There's a theory among Force scholars, Jedi philosophers. Have either of you ever been to Kashyyyk?" Ahsoka shook her head. Trying to figure out the relevance of the question, Ani said,
"Yeah, a couple of times."
Kenobi nodded to himself.
"Think of the Ruusher trees on Kashyyyk. Each one is a massive organism in its own right, but they join together and connect with neighboring trees, so that something that affects one tree, a fire or a mold, will have repercussions on trees hundreds of kilometers away because they're all connected. They are, in a sense, the same organism, even though they're also unique and distinct from each other. Some Jedi philosophers believe that the universe is a little like that. There are hundreds of millions of alternate worlds. Some scholars believe that a new one is created any time something changes, deciding to turn left instead of right, or have the Ki-Ati instead of the Kaf. Others think that they're only created at certain turning points, where a changed decision will have major effects across the galaxy.
Like a knight deciding to stay or resign from the Order," Ahsoka said, looking meaningfully at him.
He shrugged, his expression self-conscious.
"Maybe."
He ran a hand over his chin, thinking.
"Either way, all those worlds are connected through the Force, like branches on a Ruusher tree, or a set of interconnected Ruusher trees. It's believed, it's never actually been proven, that something that happens in one world can cause vibrations along the Force, creating connections in other worlds that wouldn't otherwise exist. The theory is that if those events, or those bonds, are Force-enhanced..."
"Like a master and a Padawan," Ahsoka said, enlightenment dawning on her face.
Ani was glad someone understood it. He sure as blazes didn't.
Kenobi nodded again.
"Which is one of the strongest Force bonds that we know of. The theory is that events that are steeped in the Force for one reason or another, if they involve Jedi or other Force sensitives, are going to vibrate more strongly. Most Jedi only think of the Force as existing in two planes of existence, the one that we manipulate on a daily basis and the one that leads forward into the future and back into the past. But the philosophers believe that it actually exists on an innumerable number of planes. The Force in one world isn't just connected to the Force in another. It's actually the same Force. Through it, events that happen in one world will resonate into another. I presume that would happen even more strongly if a connection has already been made, if those branches have been joined by some kind of event." Ani rubbed a hand over the back of his neck. "That's ridiculous."
Kenobi gave him a pointed look.
"This is ridiculous," he repeated.
He didn't do anything that Ani could see, but Ani felt something move in the air around him, a small breeze that ruffled his hair and tugged at the end of his scarf.
Ani leapt back, cursing. Don't do that!
Kenobi arched his eyebrows.
The Force works in ways that even the Jedi don't fully understand.
To take one example, we think we know how we can manipulate it to move objects from a distance, among other things. But even though we've been using it for millennia, we're still not entirely certain.
He nodded at the girl.
Ahsoka and I probably use the same method because we both learned it in the creche at the Jedi Temple. But I'd wager you do something else entirely since you're self-taught, if I'm not mistaken.
At least he hadn't said feral. Ani was pretty sure he was going to punch the next person who called him that.
How do you know I can do anything?
Kenobi hesitated, then said,
I can sense it on you.
Okay, because that's not creepy at all.
Most... He hesitated over the word for a moment.
Most untrained Force sensitives aren't capable of manipulating the Force. They might have better reflexes because they'll sense things happening just before they actually occur, or be able to sense a lie. But they won't be able to move small objects, see the future, or consciously influence someone else's mind.
I can do all those things, Ani blurted out.
As Ahsoka's eyes widened, he added, I didn't say I could do them well.
Kenobi considered him thoughtfully, the weight of his regard pressing at the edges of Ani's mind.
He shifted back on one foot, uneasy at the attention.
What does that have to do with anything anyway? With... which is...
He gestured vaguely with one hand, trusting that Kenobi would know what he meant.
With that.
The galaxy is wider than what you or I think we know to be fact, Kenobi said, as I believe has already been proven to both of us.
Ani couldn't argue with that.
He rubbed at his forehead and glanced aside, scowling.
Ahsoka was still frowning, apparently caught on something Kenobi had said.
But there's only one way to move things with the Force.
Kenobi shook his head. There are several, actually. Most Jedi only use the method we're taught in the creche, but there are others.
Anakin's head was starting to hurt.
How do you do it?
He said dubiously.
He didn't know why he cared, but... yeah, he did. He had never actually heard anyone talk about this stuff before, and it was pretty likely that this was going to be his only chance. He might as well run with the opportunity while it was right there, and at least it meant that he wasn't thinking about everything else Kenobi had said.
Kenobi glanced between them, as if he could divine what Ani was thinking, then reached inside his cloak and pulled out a cred coin. He held it up so that both of them could see it. Pedalantano, if you would demonstrate, please.
Ahsoka started to reach for it. He held it up over her head. She blew out her cheeks in frustration and raised her hand, her palm held out toward the cred coin, her fingers curved a little. Ani felt it this time, a kind of thickening in the air around him as the cred coin tugged free of Kenobi's grip. Ahsoka caught it neatly, then frowned and looked up at Kenobi.
Any youngling can do that. That's why we learned it in the creche.
Kenobi flicked his fingers toward Ahsoka in a more careless version of the same gesture, catching the cred coin as she released it. He turned towards Ani and said, Now you.
You don't actually know I can do anything, Ani said half-heartedly. You just said that most ferals...
He spat the word at them, but while Ahsoka winced, Kenobi just looked impassive.
Can't do anything.
So prove me wrong, Kenobi said.
He held up the cred coin.
I'm willing to be impressed.
Ani shook his head, wondering what the hells he was doing, but raised a hand anyway, self-conscious about the fact that he used a different gesture than the two Jedi had, the back of his hand parallel to the deck, and his palm facing up toward the ceiling rather than outwards.
What makes you think I want to impress you?
He said distractedly, most of his attention on the cred coin.
You're trying, Kenobi said.
just as the cred corn slipped out of his hand and floated over to Ani. It landed in the palm of Ani's hand, and he closed his fingers around it, feeling the metal dig into his skin. Kenobi actually smiled at him, and Ani blinked as he felt the Force hum a little, almost to itself. He wasn't sure that he liked the feeling, even if there was no malice in it. He opened his fist and got a thumb under the cred coin, flipping it back to Kenobi, who caught it neatly out of the air.
What in blazes does that prove?
Instead of answering, Kenobi looked at Ahsoka, who was frowning in concentration. She said slowly, "When I did it, and you, we're not interacting directly with the actual object. We're manipulating the Force around it. That's why we need a visual fix," and she waved her hand. "It's possible for a Jedi not to use either a hand gesture or a visual fix, but it's very difficult," Kenobi said. "Younglings do it instinctively before they're formally taught and lose the knack. Go on." Ani was interested despite his best instincts not to show it. He had taught himself how to do his little tricks by trial and error, so hearing someone talk about them as if their use was completely natural was a new and unfamiliar experience for him. None of the few other Jedi he had met had condescended to do so, at least not in front of him. Ahsoka chewed on her lower lip, thinking. "He's not doing that," she said slowly. "You're," she added to Ani, "doing something else. He's using the object itself?" This last was addressed to Kenobi, who nodded. Ani blinked.
"Why wouldn't you?" he said. "That's the thing you want, isn't it? Why do something more complicated?"
"It's not quite that simple," Kenobi said. He turned his hand over, the cred coin lifting up to hover a few centimeters over his palm.
"Ani couldn't do that."
Jedi usually conceptualize the Force as an energy field connecting all living things. Inanimate objects seldom have much Force presence of their own. Some, of course, but very little. It's easier for us to manipulate the energy around the object rather than the object itself, because of the way we use the Force.
"Why?"
Kenobi hesitated for an instant, then said, "Most Jedi aren't strong enough to manipulate inanimate objects directly, not for more than a few seconds. It's frowned upon to use the Force directly upon another being, too, even though it is easier. So it isn't taught in youngling classes, and most masters won't teach their padawans either."
"Why not?" Ani asked warily.
Ahsoka was watching Kenobi with narrowed eyes. He gave them both a tight smile. "It's generally considered unethical." Ani blinked. Ahsoka said,
"But we do mind tricks."
"Mind tricks are a gray area," Kenobi said slowly. "Some Jedi won't use them at all, let alone teach them. Qui-Gon, my master," he explained, presumably for Ani's benefit, "was very good at them, but Qui-Gon was a bit of a radical, and a bit of a heretic in some ways. Not as much as me, obviously."
"That would be difficult," Ahsoka agreed. Kenobi raised an eyebrow at her, and she grinned a little, sheepishly.
Ani was trying to figure out a way to ask if mind tricks were what he thought they were, without sounding like a complete imbecile, when there was a crash from outside the twilight, a burst of loud, Naboo-accented cursing, and a series of rising beeps from the astromechs. Ani turned towards the sound automatically, worst-case scenarios dancing through his head. "If those flyboys got a single scratch on my ship, I'm going to..." He glanced at Kenobi's amused expression and finished lamely.
"Be very unhappy."
"I'll take care of it if there's any damage," Kenobi said, raising an eyebrow.
"Yeah, sure, I've heard that before," Ani snorted. "I'm not in this for your revolution, and I'm not in this for your Force. I'm just in it for the money. If your moon jockey breaks my ship, then it's coming out of someone's skin.
The corner of Kenobi's mouth curled a little in something that might have been amusement or might have been disappointment.
If money is all that you love, then that's what you will receive. But I don't think that's true.
Ani would have gone swimming in one of Mustafar's rivers of lava for a single smile from Queen Amidala, but he was damned if he was going to tell the Queen's Knight that.
Whatever helps you sleep at night.
He started to turn away, uneasy with the way Kenobi was looking at him, but stopped as Ahsoka said tentatively,
"See you around, Sky Guy."
Ani felt his mouth twitch into a smile, despite another burst of swearing from outside the Twilight's hole. He said,
"Looking forward to it, Snips."
"Anakin?" Kenobi said slowly, and something about the way his name sounded in Kenobi's mouth kept Ani from protesting as he turned to look at the man.
"You've never been trained in the Force."
"Yeah," Ani said warily. "I think we just established that."
Kenobi met his gaze, and once again, Ani felt the spark between them, the connection stretching out and borrowed from another world, a dozen other worlds. It should have felt like a leash. Instead, it felt natural, and that scared Ani more than anything else.
"Would you like to be?"